Month number 8 is on our plate. A great time to be playing in the great outdoors. But I'm wondering why, as I push my cart by, Christmas decorations aren't up in the stores. Yeah, a little cynical there. Hey, welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross, where the arts and music and humanities of West Wisconsin have a loud voice. This week, we're going to travel to Chippewa Falls to visit the Heide Center to sit in a gallery, first with Deb Johnson, the director, and then with Alan Servas, well-known artist, who isn't exhibiting but did bring 16 other artists together for Ebb and Flow, Water, now on display. Catherine Thomas is here and in conversations with Cassandra Luke, a promoter, and Serena Wagner with Eric Christensen, a duo known musically as Sniffle Party, all part of Oxbow 3, the street concert coming next weekend to downtown Eau Claire. Jim Oliver lists what's on stage in West Wisconsin, and John Potter lets us know some of what's waiting in the 2019-2020 season at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. For now, let's get underway with this. The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra sets up and plays in the park again this summer. I fondly recall my guest conducting experience there a few years ago. And this season, the guest in Rice Lake's Veterans Park is Peter Phippen, well-known Native American and world flutist. I wanted to record in the natural world, so we met earlier this week at the Pablo Center Plaza outside. But it was kind of windy, so we took it inside the east hallway, and it proved to have some perfect acoustics. I want to talk about your foundation with the flute, because I read that you have been engaged in 3 decades, and the word used was research. And then I thought, well, what's the root word of research? The word is search. From what I know about your past and the flute and your relationship with it, it began as kind of a search. Did it feel like that to you?
Oh, yeah, Al. It was a happy accident. Insane accident, one might call it. You know, I was a bass guitar player in a rock and roll band. Early March of 1987, discovered a little bamboo penny whistle from India, and Teet Raid heard me play that little penny whistle, and he gave me a North Indian Bansuri bamboo flute. Peter, if you're going to play the flute, play this one.
I was reading on your website. It says, Phippen has performed, and this is the quote, performed an enchanting mix of the very old and the very new in music. I'm interested in your take on the relationship between the very old and the very new. If we look deep enough, will we find the very old in the very new?
Yes, I think so. What I try to do anyway, and this is just me, I like to use antiques, very old instruments. I like to research how the instrument may have been played, and I like to learn those embouchures. I have 3 flute collections. I have my specimen collection. Who knows what key those things are in? And then I have my antique collection, and some of those may or may not be able to be bent to play with modern instruments. And then, of course, I have my modern flutes, which are capable of playing in tune easily with an orchestra or a guitar or a piano.
Do these instruments, have they felt an evolution? Or do you feel almost blasphemous if you try to do something new on an old flute? Should you always do what these flutes have always done?
I'm an experimental musician, an improvisationalist, play the moment. And I believe that in antiquity, before things were worked out, people were improvising. They were imitating birds. They're imitating nature. So I use nature as a conduit. You know, I look to nature and I try to sound natural.
These flutes have always sounded the same. And when people get into a studio, they like to experiment. Have you felt like experimenting with the sound of, for instance, the flute you're holding, which is a Native American flute? Or does that part feel like you shouldn't touch that?
Well, most people today do not play the Native American flute like it would have been played in the 19th century or early 20th century. They make it sound pretty and beautiful. And that seems to be what the marketplace wants. I did it like that for a long time until I was fortunate enough to study with the late Dr. Richard W. Payne in Oklahoma City. Doc had basically a museum of flutes. A lot of them were antiques. He ruined the modern Native American flute for me, or Native American style flute, because I started playing all his antiques. And the antiques were haphazardly tuned, or I called them wannabe diatonic. They almost went do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, but there was a couple notes that were off. You'd have to figure out the forked fingerings. And by doing so, it opened up many doors for me, and Doc taught me to play in the old way. That really helped my playing a lot. And when I came out of there, then I was looking at the modern flutes, like I'm holding in my hand right now, the modern Native American style flute, and I was like, how can I warp this thing to make it sound old? And what I just started doing was using alternate fingerings.
Kind of like what? Alternate tunings on a guitar?
Yeah, most people like to leave the third hole closed. If you do that, then there can be no wrong notes, right? So we forget about that.
Harmonic? What is that?
That was just a little phonic overtone. But what I was doing was half-holing.
Shame on you.
Yeah. But I don't see why they wouldn't have done that. If you want that note, if you feel that note, why not? I thank Tete Rage for all that.
And many times the music one plays is a reflection of the person himself. Have you found that the three-decade journey that you've been on was meant to be? Was this the Peter Phippen that was meant to come out?
This is the real Peter Phippen. This is the one that was supposed to come out years and years ago, and if I wouldn't have found the flute, that would have been a tragedy for me, I think.
Let's shoot forward to your appearance with the Red Cedar Symphony. Tell us about the piece you're playing. Now, I have seen it listed as Lubbock Lullaby, and I see it on the release as just being listed as Lullaby. Here's what happened when I saw the title. Every song I've ever heard that had the word Lubbock in it was kind of hard-edged, and it was a country song. So where the heck does this come from?
This flute I'm holding here is a Butch Hall. I was down in Lubbock, Texas, working a show with Butch Hall Flutes. And Butch would set up a booth, and I was like the guy who stood out there and played the flutes while he would sell them. And, I don't like to play the same thing over and over ever. And by looking for some odd fingering, I stumbled across this melody. Not too much thinking here. I was in Lubbock, Texas, so I called it Lubbock Lullaby. And when I got back to Wisconsin, Dave Roll and I were playing a lot. We got together and I said, Dave, I got this melody. And it's rare for me to memorize something and play it. I don't like to do that. I said, Dave, I got this melody, and it goes like this. What can you come up with? And it became a 9.5-minute piece, and we recorded it. I've always wanted to mesh the ancient and classical together. 10 years later, I started thinking, well, we got some stuff laying around, Dave, that we have never released, and Lubbock Lullaby is one of them. And now the funny thing was, that melody took off. A lot of Native American flute forms or Native American style flute forms on Facebook, and people were trying to learn that song. A lot of people were writing it out in tablature. I thought, what the heck, let's release the real thing. Went over to Dave, I said, we've got enough for an album of outtakes, and there's nothing wrong with any of them. This is just stuff Canyon Records turned down, and I happen to like it. So with the new music business being streaming, let's throw it out there and stream it and see what happens. Put it on Spotify. Well, we did. And the original demo, that thing just went right to the top of my Spotify playlist. Ivar Lundy heard the piece, and he scored it for orchestra. And I've done it with the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra twice, and this will be the first time I've done it with the Red Cedar Symphony.
We're with Peter Phippen. We're sitting in the lobby of the Pablo Center. He has a guest appearance coming up with the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra, Ivar Lundy Jr., conducting Tuesday, August 6th, 7 p.m., outdoors at the Veterans Park Bandshell in Rice Lake. I see to my right, Victoria Shoemaker is here. Come on over. We'll talk just very briefly because we don't have a heck of a lot of time. You're appearing on August 17th in Afton, Minnesota at the Belwin Conservancy, Music in the Trees. Are you going to sit in trees?
Tree stands. 15 feet off the ground.
I didn't know Victoria had a problem with heights.
And you have another gig you want to talk about with you and Victoria.
Yeah, Victoria and I will be playing with Robbie Crawford on Crystal and Tibetan Bowls and Teat Raid for the Fall Equinox at Kinstone in Fountain City. That is a beautiful day trip. That place has magic. I call it the Stonehenge of Wisconsin, for lack of a better term.
I sense a duet coming up.
We talked about the ancient and the modern, and what she has here is a mid-19th century Mojave flute replica. It's a rim-blown flute. It's basically a stick with four holes in it. And I'm playing a bamboo flute.
I'm imagining you guys down at that Afton gig, after you're done playing, being surrounded by birds. Take us out of our chat with some music. Thanks for coming down here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra in concert, Veterans Park, Rice Lake, next Tuesday, August 6th at 7 p.m. Peter Phippen will be playing Lullaby, and the orchestra playing much more. RedCedarSymphony.org is the website there. See what I meant about the acoustics? That was cool. You're listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, a locally owned community bank, now offering new checking account options with personalized customer service. More information is available at charterbank.bank. Well, no Spectrum West is complete without a visit from Jim Oliver. Here's a look at what's on stage in West Wisconsin.
Thank you, sir. Lost in Yonkers will be presented by Rice Lake's The Red Barn Theater through Saturday, August 10th. Fools by Neil Simon, a festival theater production, will play through Sunday in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. Saving a Ghost Town, an original play by Peyton Anderson, is being presented by Theater in the Woods in Shell Lake. The show will run Friday through Sunday. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present the next Four Kids by Kids series of plays, The Pied Piper, 2 p.m. Saturday in the Oxford Theater. The Children's Theater will also present Miscast, August 9th and 10th in the Oxford Theater. The Phipps Children's Theater will hold auditions for area students for Sleeping Beauty and the Beast from 6 to 8 p.m. on Monday and Tuesday, August 12th and 13th in the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Hudson, Wisconsin, and all of western Wisconsin depends on places like the Phipps Center for the Arts to provide things for the senses, amateur theater from both perspectives, audience and participant, special events in Phipps performance spaces, music, dance, much more. The new 2019-2020 season has been announced, and we're here to literally announce it using the voice of Executive Director John Potter. You have several children's theater performances coming up this season. What's the brief history of the Phipps Children's Theater? Been around a long time?
Predates the Phipps Center.
Oh,
which,
it does.
Opened in 1983. Back in the late 60s, the St. Croix Valley Arts Guild did a number of things, including children's theater, area students performing for family audiences. The center, the Phipps Center, was built as a home for the Guild. So they moved over here in 1983, and then sometime in the late 80s, the Guild and the Center merged. But the Children's Theater has always been a part of that. Auditions are open to area students, and we probably have, seven or eight communities that are represented in our casts.
The Children's Theater officially gets underway with productions in October. Sleeping Beauty and the Beast, that threw me.
You're not familiar with that one. So it's a comedy which is a mashup of fairy tale characters.
Okay.
You'll recognize all of the characters, but you won't necessarily recognize the stories.
See, that's fun stuff. That's what kids ought to get into. In December, it's Elf Junior. Elf, wasn't that a popular movie?
Wonderfully popular movie about Buddy the Elf, and okay. This is a musical adaptation. And actually, we have four children's theater productions this season, one of which appears on another page in our season pamphlet. That is Disney's The Little Mermaid Junior, theatrical adaptation of the beautiful animated film.
Okay, and when is that?
That will be in February.
So we're still chronologically good. So we just covered February. My next revelation comes in May. That's one we all know, Charlotte's Web.
Again, an adaptation of the classic children's book. It's the story of the extraordinary friendship between Charlotte the spider and Wilbur, the little piglet who grows into quite a large pig.
And the other movie that I liked that had to do with a pig was Babe.
A wonderful story.
Wasn't that a good story?
Yes.
Let's jump to the Big People's Theater, let's put it that way. It's going to be busy with plays. I see one down and about four to go. Maybe there's more. In September, Population 485. We've talked about it before, the stage adaptation of the book that put Michael Perry on the map. In late October, then, you are tackling a classic musical that I think we should talk about because I love it.
Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, there you
go.
And
everybody loves it. And very true to the film, which is about the waning days of the silent film era. It has all of the songs and dances from the film. We're looking very forward to that.
Tell me about production challenges with rain.
Well, of course, that is the challenge, and it is our intention to make it rain on stage.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Good. We'll just leave it at that.
We will. I think it's safest that way. But yes, we do believe we have the ability to do that.
Wow, that is so cool. And good luck with that, by the way.
Thank you.
In January, we turn to drama, and I'm wondering if I should be embarrassed that I'm not familiar with this play.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Although, perhaps 20, maybe longer years ago, it was a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie under a different title. But this is the original play, which is called Ashena Madel, Yiddish for a pretty girl.
Ah.
And it couldn't be more timely. You know, we chose this well over a year ago, actually, but it is about two immigrant sisters reuniting after World War II, one of which has been in America during the war, and the other has escaped the Holocaust. Just a beautiful family story about resilience and hope, changing times, and it just seems like it's right out of the headlines today.
We'll look forward to that coming in the middle of January. Then, as the early spring snow melts in April, we lighten up again.
We do. Busybody is the name of the show, and it is a British mystery comedy about a cleaning woman who outsleuths a couple of police detectives in a murder mystery.
Ah. See, just in one sentence, you got me to want to see it. It's always smart to talk with John Potter, and that's who we're on the phone with. He's the executive director at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. We're talking about all things upcoming in yet-to-be the 2019 and new-to-be 2020 season. Music is a familiar sound in the halls of the Phipps Center. September features the Prime Time Trio, which turns out to be, I guess, a smaller version of a larger group that I believe you've featured before.
We have the Barbary Coast Dixieland Show Band, and they have performed here many times. The members with Steve Pickall on bass and Tom Andrews on drums. And for the last few years, guest pianist has been Bobby Van Dusen, a very versatile pianist as well as a singer. And he promises a show of not just Dixieland, but popular songs and show tunes.
I did not know Lake Wobegon had a brass band, but they're coming in October.
It's a traditional 30-member British-style brass band, marches, classical, quasi-jazz, and popular selections. And they're often heard on a neighboring public radio station.
No kidding. What, would that be to the west?
Well, it might be, yes.
Yeah. I heard Minnesota had public radio.
Mo Pitney. I have to get my finger more on the pulse of things. I guess I'm not a country music fan. A rising country star, early November.
That's exactly right. Highly recommended by members of our music selection committee as well as patrons. He is definitely a rising star from Nashville. First time out on the Grand Ole Opry stage, he had a standing ovation.
Wow.
An up-and-comer, and we're delighted to have him.
They know country music at the Grand Ole Opry. If they stood, it must be okay. And the first thing I'm going to do, though, is see if he's related to Gene.
You know, I don't know of the connection. I haven't read of any connection. That would be a good question.
I haven't heard of too many Pitneys throughout my career.
True.
January welcomes the Barley Jacks. They're well-known in these parts.
They're just a phenomenal group. Original bluegrass, Celtic, roots music, led by fiddler Brian Wicklin. Always popular, and they just blow the roof off the place.
I'm excited that in February you have Take Three. I believe I have spoken with one of the members.
We have not had them before, but they have been in the area. It's a piano trio.
All female.
Yep, featuring virtuosos. And you would think that a piano trio would play mainly classical music, which they do.
Okay.
They also do pop, jazz, and movie themes, and are highly theatrical in their performances. You might have interviewed their violinist, who
is also
a violinist with Yanni.
Yes, I looked at the photograph of the three ladies in your brochure, and it rang a bell. I can't recall her name, but she probably doesn't.
Unfortunately, I can't either.
She probably doesn't remember my name either. Well, you have several occasions for people to hear the Phipps Wurlitzer Theater pipe organ. I was reading the organ is a nonagenarian, but has evolved. And the first thing I thought, has John Potter ever snuck in at night and played that thing?
You know, if I could, I would have done that, but I would not play the keyboards. It's a fully restored theater pipe organ, which you could think of as an early synthesizer to accompany silent films, and that was originally installed in the Capitol Theater in downtown St. Paul. And we have a regular concert series, which is rare for this area.
So it literally played when the train was going down the track. Gal was tied to the...
It still does.
Tied to the track?
Coming up in October, Ron Rhode will be performing Cinema Classics. That will be music of the movies, but he'll also be accompanying a Buster Keaton short silent called The Boat.
Oh, cool. All right, several very special events.
Ballet Collaboratory. They like to collaborate with other companies. And they'll be performing Remembering the Little Prince, their interpretation of the classical tale of the little prince who comes from a far asteroid and has all sorts of life lessons. And it will feature their core company as well as 16 area dancers. So it is, we're really looking forward to it.
Later this month, Classic Big Band and the Nostalgics, then Gals, Old Comedy, must be Irish, arrive in October. And let's look way ahead. The holidays, always special at the Phipps.
Holiday concerts by the Phipps Festival Chorus, their 30th season presenting holiday performances, mix of classical and popular music. A great way to start the holiday season.
And there's lots more. I have the brochure opened in front of me as I speak. It reminds me of a roadmap, and you know the old line about how do you refold a roadmap?
No, I know. How do you refold a roadmap?
Differently.
Exactly so.
That's the old joke about that.
It's true.
John Potter, thanks so much. Congratulations on another star-studded season coming up. We are looking forward to you and your staff keeping up the great work. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. I greatly appreciate it.
The brochure and the season also includes the dance theater, the choral society, the beautiful galleries of the Phipps, where visual art comes to shine. Everything you need to know, including how to plan your season experience with the Phipps, is online at thephipps.org. Coming up, a special exhibit brandishing the work of 16 of our finest artisans. We'll travel to the Heide Center. But first, Catherine Thomas is back this week, looking at next weekend's Oxbow 3. She talks with Serena Wagner and Eric Christensen, known musically as Sniffle Party. And she begins with event details in a chat with Cassandra Luke, events and marketing director for the Oxbow Hotel and the Lakely in downtown Eau Claire.
Oxbow 3 is a two-day live music experience that takes place right in the heart of downtown Eau Claire, right in front of the Oxbow Hotel in the Lakely. It's an annual concert where we celebrate music, food, and culture in downtown Eau Claire. We really love this because it allows us to do something in our cool, urban, yet historic downtown location and really celebrate things that we're passionate about. What we strive to do in the hotel, in the restaurant, and then in events that we do is really create experiences that we can share with others. And the Oxbow Street Concert and Courtyard Concert allow us to do that on a much larger scale.
The press release for Oxbow calls it a unique outdoor music experience. So you didn't just go with, it's a festival. Unique outdoor music experience.
Yeah, perhaps the coolest thing about the experience for us is that it is right in the heart of the city. We actually close off Galloway Street, which runs right in front of us. We bring in a large stage and we erect that right on the street. And we build the whole experience right around that. It's more intimate than events such as Country Jam or Country Fest and Rock Fest, because here guests are in a much smaller footprint. They're closer to the music and they're really living that experience with us.
Who do you expect to see in the audience out there on Galloway Street? This isn't just like a hipster thing, is it?
Definitely not just a hipster thing. Traditionally, we do see a large mix of both our local community and folks who've come from afar. In years past, we've hosted the Oxbow concert just before the Eau Claire's Festival. That's landed us travelers from literally across the world. This year, we have people from nearly 20 different states coming. It's reaffirming to us that what we're doing in Eau Claire resonates with our local community and people from further away. So they want to be here and they want to share these experiences with us.
I read that it's considered a family-friendly event. It's not like going out for music at a bar or something. Kids are welcome.
Kids are welcome. We generally don't see a lot of children. It is a more an older crowd generally that's there, but definitely is kid friendly. We host about 2,000 people each year. That's our sellout number, and we're close to that already this year. So we do anticipate hitting 2,000 again.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So Oxbow 3 this year is 2 days of music instead of one. Who is performing and when?
We're really excited about that because in the past it's just been one day. It's been the Thursday before the Eau Claire's Festival. So that's one of the things that we're really excited to have this year. And Friday night, what we're doing is really celebrating some of the musicians that we have right here in our backyard. We've got the North of Dixie Bluegrass Band, Pit Wagon, Arms Aloft, and then the Drunk Drivers will headline Friday night and close that out. And then on Saturday, we've got just an amazing lineup again as well. We'll start things off on Saturday with Sniffle Party, who is also an awesome local duo group. And then we've got Flock of Dimes, Chris Rosano of Volcano Choir with Nick Sanborn of Sylvanesso, Alpha Consumer, The Shouting Matches, who we know and love, that has Justin Vernon, Phil Cook, Brian Moen, and Jill Moen. And then co-headlining is Jenny Lewis. And we are so stoked to have all of them with us.
What kind of genres would you say are represented?
The music this year is so incredibly diverse. We've got everything from bluegrass and folk to indie rock and pop. That's part of the beauty of this stage. It really marries the various sounds and brings them together for a collaboration that's just going to be totally unforgettable.
Besides that, there's going to be food and beverages. The Lakely Restaurant, what are they going to bring?
Everything that we do is locally sourced. So we're working with our local farmers and producers. That's for our food and our craft cocktails and drinks. Chef Eric Mendoza is going to be featuring some pulled pork sandwiches, bratwurst, roasted carrot dogs, and more. So definitely want to check that out. We'll also be pouring local beers from our friends at the Brewing Project on the grounds and in the Lakely. So we're super excited for that. And we'll also have some other great foods coming from the folks over at Fire Truck Pizza, Smokestream Food Truck, Ramon's Ice Cream, Kickapoo Coffee, and Just Local Foods. We're fortunate enough to have some amazing sponsors who are working with us: Brewing Project, Shelter Architecture, The Current, and Volume One. And we're also looking forward to having the folks from Visit Eau Claire with us. They're going to be doing a photo booth, and they'll have a full-size cube pitch, so attendees can get out there and play some cube. And then we'll have everyone from Ambient Inc. also on site. They're going to be doing live screen printing. We haven't had that before, so really excited for that.
Now, how do I get tickets for this?
Tickets for Friday night are sold out at this time. We do have tickets for Saturday still available. They're $25 per person, and you can get them online, volume1tickets.org. Find details there with the full lineup, times, and everything. You can also head to our website. That's theoxbowhotel.com. We've got an event listing there with all the details and links for tickets as well.
Cassandra Luke, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate you guys having me here.
All right, here we are in the studio with Serena Wagner and Eric Christensen of Syphil Party. I admit I'm not really into the local music scene too much. Despite that, I have heard of Syphil Party, and I've always loved your name. Do you have a lot of history in this area? Are you from here?
Yeah, I personally was born and raised here, graduated from North, and I went to college here as well. Just having known so many people in this community, I think really gave us a lot of support from the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've been here, I guess, like 8 out of the last 10 years or something. I went to school here and moved around a little bit when I graduated and ended up back in town.
Do you think that there's any of Eau Claire or Western Wisconsin that inspires any of your music?
Yeah, I mean, our first EP was like a total love letter, I would say, to the city and the community. So a lot of our songs kind of ruminate on what it is to be living in this space and also creating.
Also, like, we have to go through such, like, punishing winters that, like, the summer is so good. Like, I don't know, we just, like, appreciate it a lot more. Appreciate the imagery a lot. The rivers rolling by and all the tall trees and stuff. Mm-hmm. It is kind of an inspiring thing once it all comes back to life, you know. And so we use that time creatively as much as we can.
Yeah, one of your songs is called All the Snow Is Gone, which right away, of course, yes, we would all celebrate that living here in Western Wisconsin. What else would you like to say about that song, or how would you like to introduce it?
Yeah, in a very literal sense, obviously it's about driving in country back roads and appreciating the spring and new birth and new life, but also it's about feeling lost but yet still following a road where you don't know where it's going and sitting with that feeling of not knowing.
Describe your sound. I've read descriptions of it. Witchy pop music. Mm-hmm. That's a dream within a dream. Maybe you wrote that. I don't know. Would you describe it that way or what words?
Yeah.
It's always been a bit challenging for Eric and I to try and define our sound because when we sit down to create, we don't like to put the pressure of creating within a guidelines or framework of any given genre, but rather we let the lyrics or the melody sort of dictate where the song should go. But I think with that ambiguity also, where you can't pinpoint exactly one genre, allows multiple access points for our listener audience to engage with our sound. I think through that gives this sort of feeling of empowerment, because even for us as creators, it's always like we're hearing something new or we're discovering something new. So Yeah, we try not to create within too many boundaries and kind of let our sound be fluid.
Yeah, and we play with all kinds of different bands. We've played with hip-hop acts. We play with, like, punk rock bands. Mm-hmm. It kind of fits in between a lot of genres really well. And more recently in music, there's a lot of artists that are making almost genre-less music. Mm-hmm. You see more and more of that happening. People that blend jazz and hip-hop mm-hmm. are, like, in our case, we kind of blend some, like, rock stuff with pop mm-hmm. and, like, I don't know.
R&B.
It's a lot of, yeah, some R&B. And our influences come from all over. You know, mm-hmm. there's so much music to listen to that's coming out right now. There's so much music in the past that we're inspired mm-hmm. by. We just have so many different influences kind mm-hmm. of flowing in. Mm-hmm. What comes out of it, I'd like to think, is kind of an example of all of it sort mm-hmm. of smashed together.
Right.
And so we really, like Serena said, we don't really try to define it that much. Mm-hmm. We just kind of let it flow mm-hmm. and figure it out.
All the sound comes from the keyboard?
And my keyboard and my trusty little MacBook. It's MacBook Pop, I guess mm-hmm. you could call it.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, we've got all the drums programmed in there, and I'm playing synths and making all kinds of weird noises mm-hmm. with the keyboard. And Serena has a ton of vocal effects that are really mm-hmm. cool that she's using. And it all kind of blends together into mm-hmm. a pretty nice little thing.
You get to perform on Saturday night. There are two nights of music this time around. And Saturday night is the headliner night.
Mm-hmm.
So
crazy,
you're with Jenny Lewis and the Shouting Matches, mm-hmm. among others. How does it feel to be sharing a stage with nationally known acts like those?
Insane. I mean, we haven't completely wrapped our minds around it. First of all, it's crazy that we can get bands like that on a street in Eau Claire. It's even crazier we get to kind of perform in the mm-hmm. same space that they get to and breathe the same air that they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be cool. We're going to try and not be starstruck, I think.
Yeah. It's very humbling as mm-hmm. well, just being from here and now getting to perform on a stage with folks like that. It's a really wild feeling.
Yeah, we feel really lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, to be asked to do something like that is pretty huge honor, mm-hmm. so I'm pretty excited.
Serena, Eric, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Oxbow 3, next Friday and Saturday, downtown Eau Claire. More fun in the neighborhood. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Simply Dunn in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Coming up next week, We Banjo 3 is back in Wisconsin with a new album. We'll be talking with David. We'll follow a beverage trail. We'll hear about a popular hometown radio show and more. Right now, Alan Servas is a celebrated creator of visual art. But the topic of this next segment isn't his work, but his association with other artists and his ability to choose their work for an exhibit with a specific theme. The compilation is on display at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls. It's called Ebb and Flow, Water. I met in one of the galleries with Mr. Servas and initially Deb Johnson, Heidi director. She made it a trio.
You guys got together to discuss an exhibit. I'm wondering about the criteria used in the selection process. It's been a while. We've never done that. I saw one like it and it was great. I've always had this in the back of my mind, all of the above.
First of all, I admire Alan quite a bit. Here's what Alan brings. Because we're so busy here, a lot of times I'm more reacting to people bringing me ideas. But when Alan and I get together, we have great discussions, and he has a finger on the pulse of some of the artists that I am not seeing. So the last time we had an exhibit here, it was spectacular. It was really well done. And it was people that I had not known or known very well that he knows. And so I leaned on that. So I asked him if he'd be willing to help me out with that again, and he was.
That's part of my question. Does the theme always come first and then you add artists, or do you get artists in mind and then build an exhibit around them? Or both ways at times?
It's done both ways. I think the first exhibit we did here, it was more general. There really wasn't a particular theme. But this one, we both felt, I think, that there had to be. And because it started with a theme which didn't work out for us timing-wise, I sat looking out the window that evening. We happened to live on a small lake, and I was looking at the water out there, and I thought, something to do with water. And, I mean, timely, Chippewa Valley, Eau Claire, clear water. So I just thought ebb and flow, you know, it's not a new saying or anything, but I thought, well, that might fit. And then hyphen water. Ran it past Deb, ran it past a couple artist friends of mine, and they said, great, sounds good. My idea was to keep the show rather small. There's a lot of artists to pick from. The public probably isn't keenly aware of the amount of really, really great art that's being turned out. A lot of the artists that live in the Chippewa Valley simply live here, but they show their work all over the country. I'm in a lucky position that I've been here for a long time, and I know most of the artists, the older ones, the old-timers I call them, and who are fading away, one of which was supposed to be in this show, and he unfortunately passed away before the opening. That was Bob Gerke. In fact, I dedicated the show to him. So I narrowed it down to 16 people, and I thought, well, I'll keep with Deb's idea, inviting some people that I thought were rather new faces. And when you say emerging, you automatically think young. But a lot of emerging artists, one of our emerging artists in this show is in her late 60s. But she's just, you know, really getting started, finally had the time to do it. And so I thought I'll try to combine the exhibit to be artists that I thought deserve more space on the walls, more people seeing them, combined with some artists that I think would be more recognizable names, like, you know, for instance, Teat Reid and some people like that. Plus, the other criteria was that knowing most of these artists and their work, I thought they would do real well with the theme of water. So that was really my criteria.
While we still have you here, Deb, let's publicize what happens at the Heidi Center visual arts-wise. This exhibit is not going to be up as long as I envisioned it would be. So how many do you have a year?
Well, it used to be once a month, but it got to be a bit too much for our staff to be able to help out and get things going. So we've kind of moved it to a month and a half for the exhibits. We do have the Spring Art Show, which is 2 weeks, and then we have the district-wide with the public school system, and that's another couple of weeks. So to kind of throw things off, approximately probably 6 to 7 shows. We work with the Valley Art Association. They have a show here that's kind of a standing show. The other ones, I just put out a call for artists to see if a group or individuals would be interested in showing here in 2020. It is going to be our 20th anniversary as a Heidi Center for the Arts in 2020. Try to get some ideas, and we've already gotten some fantastic people that I've not heard of. Got some really interesting ideas and takes on things. So visual arts-wise, we have 1, 2, 3 gallery spaces. And so we can do an individual in each gallery. We can have a bigger show. I like working with groups sometimes that make it more open and accessible so that I don't have to try to vet each artist, but we have a group that's vetting the artists before they come in. Next year is going to be a nice kind of open year if people are interested in showing up here.
Let's name drop the names of the 16 people who are involved in this.
Why did you pick the people that you picked? Part of it was serendipity. I knew all of the artists, not well, but Kay Brathel Fosvet, for instance, she shows at the gallery I show at, Donna Madison. And I was familiar with her work, and she and her husband moved to the area just recently, within the last 2 or 3 years. And I thought, well, Kay could use a little more exposure. The same with Maureen Skrosky. She's one of them that I think is just really trying to get her work out there, and she is a pastel artist, lives here, has taught for her whole life, so I invited Maureen. Jenna Reuter, again, a younger artist on her way up, I think, and does beautiful work. She's been teaching at Memorial for the last, I don't know how many years, but she's one of the younger artists. Hope Green is another one. She's a photographer. I don't think a lot of people are familiar with Hope's work. David Caridori has been showing her work for years. Well, when I say years, for the last 3 or 4 years.
And David's on the list, too.
David's on the list. He's one of the old-timers. Of course, he does vessels. And I thought, well, what more can you say? Vessels hold water. Dan Ingersoll, who teaches at Memorial, recently retired, and he is not real prolific, but he always comes up with something which is just riveting, I think. I think his work is terrific. And he has a very interesting vessel upstairs in the sculpture area. Steve Immerman, a surgeon. He's one of the more well-known artists in the area. Steve has been doing artwork, glasswork for years and years and years. I felt that Steve's work would lend, number one, the glass would lend a real different medium to the show. And I knew that his work, at least some of the work that I've seen of his over the years, very, very reflective. Ooh, that sounds a bit. I thought it would fit well. And so he's got his work here. A newer artist in the area, Tim, and I want to get his name correctly, Rudnicki. He's from the Milwaukee area. And he's relatively new. And I have seen some of his beautiful tables. He was a natural pick. Lori Cilofoni. Lori's been showing, but a lot of people still aren't aware of her work. I thought she'd be a good fit. I knew that she'd jump at this. At least I thought she would. And she did. Denise Presnell is new in the area. Denise was a college educator for years and years. She moved here 2 or 3 years ago. She had a show at Volume 1, and I thought it was a pretty impressive show, and I liked her work. I thought she had a lot of work in that show that I thought were water-type things, things that would lend itself to that topic, at least. She's part of the show. Teat Raid. Teat is one of the... Well, I don't need to talk about Teat. His work is, and we're sitting right there in front of it. He was a no-brainer. And the same with Bob Gerke. Susan Phelps Pearson, her work, you've got to see it. She is one of the most prolific and interesting artists, and she works with everything from piano keys and junk that her husband brings home on the road to acrylic paintings, which are very beautifully done, and a collage piece over here. And again, she was one of the people that just came right into my mind. Joe Maurer is a younger artist, again, someone who's on his way up. He's relatively new, and he has a really, really nice show at Volume 1 right now. Fine oil painter. Bruce Warren. Bruce is one of the, if you see a photographer standing around underneath the cape and the old 4x5, around town here, it's got to be Bruce, and he does spectacular black and white photography. He was another one that I just naturally called. I knew he had done some really nice work with some water shots of the Eau Claire River. Ned Gannon. Ned is another one that he teaches at the university. Ned is a terrific illustrator, and that's what he teaches is illustration. Yet his work, I think, like most good illustrators, bridges that gap. You take his work out of the illustration mode and you put it into the gallery context, and it's just like there is no division between so-called fine art and commercial art. Janice Roberts, we didn't mention her. Janice used to teach at Memorial, by the way, and she was another one that was one of the first on my list. She's been in the Chippewa Valley teaching for many, many, many years, but she hasn't had a lot of chances to show her work yet, so I wanted to give her some space in here. Her work purposely flows right into the black and white photography of Bruce's.
We're talking with Alan Servas. Ebb and Flow, Water is the name of the exhibit, now up at the Heide Center in Chippewa Falls through August 28th. Tell our audience about the artists' fraternity, the relationship that exists between artists. I think many of us out here might think that it's a competitive business, but it turns out to be almost more cooperative than competitive.
We talk about the arts, musicians, writers, poets, dancers, and there are differences. Visual artists, one of the owners of a gallery that I show my work with said once years ago, she said, just remember, Alan, you're trying to sell something to people that they want but they don't need. I don't necessarily agree with that. My good friend Lori Beasy would have just absolutely taken umbrage at that because she thinks that we do need art. The way she was arguing the point, I think that how empty certainly my life would be without art. And yet a lot of people really do spend, I mean, we get influenced by art, but a lot of people spend their lives really kind of not paying much attention to any of the arts. They certainly get influenced by art. They don't know it. It's subliminal. It's used all the time. Artists have been purveyors of goods and services. It's always being used, and people are, you know, being manipulated by it. But that's not really what I think you're getting at. What you're getting at is that we artists tend to work in isolation, and certainly visual artists really work in isolation. I do. I work by myself 100% of the time. I don't, you know, I'm up in my little room. I address it to myself and whom it may concern. And I think that, yes, with all the egos and the, what am I looking for here? We all feel like
is my work good enough? Is it going to, is anybody, is always this feeling of artists tend to know that part about each other. And so in my experience, and I can't speak for other artists, I have been encouraged by other artists. I have, you know, other artists come to my openings. I go to other artists' openings because we all know we're in the same boat. And we all know that we need that encouragement because we all feel that. Now, what goes on inside people's heads, I don't know. But as far as a fraternity, the fraternity, if there is one, it's pretty loose. And it doesn't exist in any official way. But I think artists, we all know that we're going through the same things. We've all been through the same battles. And the battles are inner battles with ourselves, certainly with the work and trying to produce something that we think is honest and worthy. And at the same time, knowing, especially the visual arts, we are at the bottom of the heap. I always say, people say, well, if you want to make a living, what was it, Henry Mancini, I would say, if you want to make a living in music, sell band uniforms. But, you know, music, because it's entertainment, people can go to it, they can be entertained by music, and there's just so many different kinds of music, as there are visual arts. But I think people, too, over the years have been fed a kind of a line. There's a certain kind of a snobbery that's associated. People are afraid, they feel like reluctant to go to a gallery because they think that they might ask a stupid question or something. There's an intellectual side to everything, but it really does affect everybody, and there's something out there for everybody. And I think that art is very approachable. I always encourage people, I said, don't apologize for what you like. You like something at least. I mean, you can't like it all. There's something out there for everybody. I have found artists, though, to be basically very supportive. I try to be. That's nice.
Thank you for being with us, and congratulations on a nice exhibit.
Thank you. Thanks for the time.
The Heidi Center, showing art and showing off some fine entertainment. It's all online at cvca.net. Well, I see we have some time for some Spectrum memoranda. At the Mabel Tainter, it's a showcase of musical partners Lucy and Seth's sixth summer show next Friday through Sunday. And tickets for the fall season are now on sale by phone and at the box office. Passes for the Flyway Film Festival are now on sale for the October 10th through 13th event. The website, flywayfilmfestival.org. Don't forget, also at the Heidi Center, the Swampers present Today in the Valley next Thursday and Friday, 7 p.m. At the Heidi, art classes include watercolor with Karen Beegin and Autumn Harvest Winery on August 13th. Introduction to Soft Pastels next Saturday, August 7th. Fun with Soft Pastels, August 19th. We talked about the FIP Center. Well, today, if you're listening Thursday, the Snow Queen plays this afternoon at 1:30. Also tomorrow, Friday, 7 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday matinees, August 3rd and 4th, 2 p.m. TheFIPS.org is again that website. Thanks to Allison for promotional support, and gratitude to Dean for supervision, Kate for archiving, and as usual, thank you guys for catching our show when you can. We'll do it again next week. Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver and Catherine Thomas. See ya.